will call the June 27th meeting of the Carson City Planning Commission to order. Could we have roll call and determination of a quorum?
Chairperson Sattler.
Present.
Vice Chair Borders.
Here.
Commissioner Esswein. Commissioner Monroy. Commissioner Preston. Commissioner Stoll. Commissioner Tingle. A quorum is present.
Thank you. Commissioner Borders, would you lead us in the pledge, please? Public comment. The public is invited at this time to comment on and discuss any topic that is relevant to and within the authority of the Planning Commission, including any matters that is not specifically included on the agenda as an action item. Do we have anyone for public comment at this time? Seeing none, for possible action, approval of the minutes for our May 30th meeting. Any changes or questions on them? A motion.
Mr. Chairman, I'll make a motion we accept the minutes as presented.
We have a motion. We have a second. We have a second. Commissioner Tingle, all in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you. I just turned over my agenda, not the minutes. Okay. Let's see. Public hearing matters, SUP-18-082. For possible action to consider a request for a special use permit to create an outdoor interactive space to include fencing, ground cover, and interactive play and display features in the front of the Children's Museum on property's own public community and located 813 North Carson Street, APN 002-164-01.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Hope Sullivan, Planning Manager. A special use permit is required for this, I'm going to call it an expansion, because the property is zoned public commercial, public community. Curiously, when you go out there to see what's around it, it has hotels on three sides. And then in the rear on the other side, and I'll show you on the map, on the other side of Plaza Street are commercial buildings. So I find that the outdoor activities will be compatible with the adjacent uses. The objective is to create a more inviting area to encourage the visitors to come to the museum. All improvements will be off the right-of-way and will not encroach onto the sidewalk. I actually was a little concerned when this first came in at the idea of pedestrians walking by such a tall fence and kind of what that feel would be like. And then it occurred to me that because it would be on private property, it's really a could-have-been building. So I think it's that same experience, and it's not really compromising the pedestrian experience because it is entirely on private property right where you could put a building. And in fact, if you're out on the site, you'll see the property to the south has the building seemingly going right to that property line. So this would be a continuation of that kind of frontage, if you will. Also, the HRC reviewed this application at their meeting of May 10, 2018. And they approved the project with conditions. So for the most part, the conditions that they identified have been incorporated into the approval that's before the Planning Commission. The HRC's, any appeal of HRC is to the board. So there was not an appeal of the HRC action, so I did not incorporate their conditions into your conditions because it's not necessary. You're two independent entities. So they can condition it all by themselves. But there's no conflict between what's before you today in terms of staff's recommended conditions and what the HRC's recommendation is. When you consider the special use permit, you're considering the seven findings of fact. In the staff report, we were able to make each of those findings in the affirmative, and we are recommending approval. John Coppolas, the architect, is present, and he has his team with him. If you have any questions, and I'm happy to go in further into depth on anything. Thank you.
Thank you. Hope we have any questions for staff. Commissioner Stoll.
Maybe more for the applicant, but just explaining why the idea of having a closed fence on Carson Street And then explaining what's being removed from the existing site and what is being proposed, particularly in terms of the existing trees that are there now and the playground amenities that are being proposed, but particularly in terms of that fence that's being proposed to replace the existing fence.
Mr. Chair, the term closed fence makes me think of an opaque fence, and this is not an opaque fence.
As I understand it, reading the staff report, the fence would be closed to pedestrian access from Carson Street.
Okay, so you're talking about the primary access being moved to the side street as opposed to continuing to be from Carson Street. I will let the applicant speak to that. When you said closed, I thought opaque, and it was very important to HRC that the building be visible. So thank you. I'll have the applicant respond.
Any other questions for staff? So would the applicant like to come forward, please? First of all, sir, introduce
yourself. Name is John Kopelos. I'm the architect representing the Children's Museum.
Thank you, sir. You've seen all the conditions of approval for the planning part of this.
Correct.
And they're all acceptable to you?
Sir? Correct.
Okay. Do you want to address her
sure.
question, if you would be so kind?
Right now, the main doors to the museum are being used and will continue to be used. The main entrance onto the site has always been on the side street because that's where the parking is. And that even though there are a couple spaces from redevelopment that were built on site, no one parks there. People always park on the side to bring their kids in. And what we're proposing to do with the fence is to create this space so that as they enter from the side, they've got a space where they can play without worrying about them running out onto Carson Street. The second issue is, and it's unfortunate, but there's a considerable homeless problem in the neighborhood, and the combination of kids and other people in the neighborhood have concerns with the Children's Museum. Originally, we went to HRC with a higher fence, and we compromised with them because they wanted a lower fence that they felt would be more compatible with the building, so we made that change. But we want to stay higher than the fence that's there now because it's a considerable problem.
I believe you mentioned trees and landscaping.
Okay. Do you have the site plan? No. All right.
For the benefit of the commission, page A01 does have your site plan.
Oh, from here?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. Oh, this is good. All right, this is a demolition plan. Right now, there's two planners on each side of the entrance. After meeting with the historic resources, they were not historic. They were an add-on to the building. It allowed us to take them out. So we're taking out all the trees and vegetation. All of those trees kind of outgrown the space. So there's two trees that you see out front. Those two big trees are remaining. And we're hoping to use them as part of the interactive play, whether it's a swing, whether we put a little treehouse in them, whatever we do, but we're going to leave those two trees there. That'll still provide most of the shade for the space, because otherwise it's west exposure. So that's the plan. We're going to take all the fencing out that's there in front right now, all the planters, all the benches that are within our property, so that we're just going to have a complete space. We're going to then fence it all off. Can you flip to the next? This is the entry gate that will be off basically Ann Street parking. The rest of this will be fenced. We do have gates in the front that for special events we can open wide so we can use this whole space, including the street. They entertain special events. And we may look at the possibility of closing Carson Street for some of those, in which case those gates will open up to the whole street, because then it'll be safe to do so. Redevelopment left a couple parking spaces. It's in front. I mean, they're ideal for like a food truck to pull in and with us opening the gates. So that's the general plan. We've left inside the space kind of flexible, because as the Children's Museum there, exhibits are constantly changing. We see that space changing as well. I mean, for instance, we put a tree swing in now. If the kids aren't using it, we'll do something different. So we do, the two infrastructure is the fence, and then depending on budget, what can we do for a surface that will be a safety surface like you find in some playgrounds. So ideally, we'd like the interlocking mats to use those. It's going to be a budget. We'll see how we do with the budget.
Is that covered? I believe, sir, under the planters, were those steps full width, I believe, originally, all the way across the front? Or are they under the planters? Do
you know what? Did we put the picture? There was a historic picture in the...
I'm pretty sure that had railings, and those steps were much wider originally.
No, that's all the original stairs, yeah. At least from the historic picture that we found. So the planters are the only thing that was different. We anticipate using the steps almost like a little amphitheater. There'll be times. It all depends on how much traffic is on Carson Street. If it's noisy, they won't be able to do storytelling and things of that sort, but I mean, that's an idea that we have, that we'll use the steps as an amphitheater to do some types of things if it allows. So, but any other questions?
Any other questions for the applicant? Okay. Commissioner Vorder.
On the entry gate on the side, is it just going to be open during the hours that the museum's open and then closed and locked?
Yes.
Or is it spring loaded, or
well, we got to work with both the building department and the fire department.
Okay.
They're going to want it as an exit, and that building itself already has three exits, so it'll just be the play area that needs exiting. But by code, I mean, you could put 100 people in there, and it'll never happen, but that's how they look at the code. So we'll work with them, but when the museum is closed, that space will be locked. closed. That's part of the problem now. The space is being used as an overnight sleeping area.
Any other questions for staff, for the applicant? Go ahead, Commissioner Beshman.
I think the one thing that I think we're all concerned about is just basically retaining those trees, but it did also indicate that there is going to be another tree that's planted, but it looks like it's pretty close to the building.
No.
That's one that might have been there already.
Back in the corner, more by the entrance.
Yeah, we were going to take all the trees out except the two trees in the front.
Okay.
Those two are staying. This dash one and these planters also will be taken. I believe there's some shrubs tucked in the back and sides too, in the planters. No. Any other questions for the applicant? Thank you, sir.
You're welcome.
Public comment. Would anyone from the public like to come up and comment on this at this time? Seeing none, I'll bring it back to the commission for further discussion or a motion. Mr. Stowell.
Just for discussion, I have a problem in creating a fenced area that doesn't allow people walking along the street to go in the main entrance of the building. That building, I went in there this afternoon. It's obviously still open to the public as the main entrance to the building. And I have a real concern about creating a fenced area when we're trying to create more pedestrian activity along Carson Street. No problem with the play areas, but I think this could be done without having to create a blocked entrance to pedestrian traffic along Carson Street. I don't think it has to go that far. So that's my concern.
But possibly, too, if that's open, then the homeless, while the kids are out there playing, or the kids come out to the street or whatever, if it's accessed that way, it looks like they're trying to direct access into the building to the side, which is where most of the kids come through and in and out. So
well, I
understand what you're saying.
Yeah.
Mr. Chair, can I just ask for clarification? Is it that you don't believe the gate should be secured, but you're okay if it's closed?
I think people walking along Carson Street should be able to go in the main entrance of the museum, which is Carson Street. I was just there this afternoon. You had a kids group that was coming out the front. They were sitting in the corner area having a snack. So that front door is being used. Even though they may have parked on the side, they're coming in and out of that front entrance, and I think that should still be an active entrance. That is, it's a beautiful building. It's obviously historic, and I hate to see it being secured so nobody can go in the front entrance.
I think the applicant wants to respond to that.
Can I please respond? I think you're misinterpreting. We're still using the front door. We're just using the traditional side to get there. No kids come in on Carson Street. No kids are walking down Carson Street to go into that building. If a bus has come from the schools, latchkey, whatever, they're all parking on Ann Street.
But I think what the commissioner is referring to is if we're walking by and
by, then
there,
you can't come in the front.
You wouldn't
you have
be
to
able
come
to
around
come
the side.
Around
that
the
part
side.
Is true. That part is true. But just for the record, the front doors are still the main entrance to the building, and they will continue to be so.
And I imagine the reason this is being done is security.
Correct.
You know, so the kids can be out there playing and not worry about either them getting out or somebody coming in.
Yeah, you're going to be hearing from the school district here in the next, and they're going to tell you the same thing. You know, security is a different situation now. It'd be great if we could do that, but we have that situation now, and it's not working.
If we were walking by, we still could go to the side entrance
Correct.
And come around and go in the front door if we wanted to come that way. We just can't walk into it right off the street,
Correct.
Carson Street.
Except for special events.
Mr. Preston.
Over the past couple of years, I've had to build 6 playgrounds throughout the state of Nevada and actually overseen by the Welfare Department, behavioral situations and so forth. Every time we have had a fence, and typically they don't even have a fence that has an access from the outside at all, and that ability. And the reason is primarily for safety, and they are not typically on a street that has, you know, actually two lanes going each way and in a center lane, as it is right there. That's where it starts to change. So that's one of the things that I realize, that this fence is a little bit higher, but to actually be able to utilize the outside space of that building is, I think, really a good use of the space.
And it is wrought iron or whatever, so it's totally visible through it, et cetera, yet it still offers the security. And as I said, in events or whatever, they will open those gates if they want to have it somehow out front. Any other comments or?
Regarding insurance liability, I'm assuming, always dangerous, that the typical insurance liabilities are in place for the interactive play areas should anyone be injured or fall or impale themselves on the fence, God forbid. But, yeah, just saying, you know, the usual typical, okay.
But that, certainly.
This building belongs to Carson City, so the liability is us, all of us. So I don't know what risk management. I know we've had the project's been reviewed by the property manager, Carson City's property manager, and her name escapes me now. Is it Chris Stephan?
So. They're the tenant in the building. The city owns the building, and the city. The city property manager will ensure proper insurances are in place.
Yeah. The Children's Museum says that the city requires them to have insurance.
We have full coverage in Old Town for any kind of liability as much as we need for our type of organization. And
I think you have to come up.
I'm sorry. I'm screaming from the
bathroom. I will. I'm Casey Gillis. I'm the board president right now at the museum. Yes, we have full coverage. We do have the building from the city on a lease, but we are responsible for all that coverage, and we have it all up to date and fully done, and know that before we started this project. Okay.
And my kids are 36 and 35 now, and I remember taking them down there when they were quite young, and they enjoyed it very much. Thank you for what you do down there.
We still get a lot of people exactly that. I used to be here as a kid, and, boy, it seemed bigger or whatever. But we just felt we needed to have some outdoor space for families, and we needed it to be safe. After 30 years working for Carson City Schools, I just couldn't have kids out there without the safety features. And again, just so you know, our vision for this is not another McDonald's playground or a lot of plastic. We want to keep it very natural, very interactive. And our feeling is, with the fencing is still looks like the other fencing on the street, it's just larger, that it will be people who are driving through Carson City may not even realize that now this is a children's museum. If they see children out there playing with their parents, and they would always be out there with parents because we don't do daycare, that it would add to the city, it would add to the redevelopment. If they see children playing, ooh, I think I'll take my kids there. So that was part of our reason to do this. And safety, that's old cement, it's old brick, it's old things that kids could trip on. I mean, you talk about liability, it's also a big safety feature. And we have worked, I know you're concerned with the plants, we've talked to Dave Ruff about things we could move, but the big trees will stay. We've already had one taken out because it was diseased and the city took it out a couple of months ago. But that is something we've thought of, and we want to keep it natural, but we need to do the demolition before we can start over. Any other questions?
Just one question. Will your budget, when you do these improvements, will you be able to do upkeep on the front of the building? I noticed the doors are worn, and do you have, or is that the city's responsibility?
That's a good question. We're working on it. It's not part of this project, but we're hoping that as we do this, we can then get the doors, because they are the historic doors and lock system. So we're hoping to do that too, along with the front of the building. So, okay.
As I recall, which was a long time ago, when I was 14 and they were holding city dances, high school dances, in that building. And those are the original doors and the original steps and the original everything. And right. As old as I am, I'm sure they're feeling the wear as well.
Yeah, well, we're working on it. Well, you know, there may be another dance in September. You'll look for it in the paper. We're thinking of a little karaoke and some dancing to start the school year, so maybe then. Anything? Thank you.
Okay.
Got a motion?
You're ready for more discussion or a motion, whatever.
Mr. Chairman, I'll make a motion.
Mr. Borden.
I move to approve SUP 18-082, a request for a special use permit to create an outdoor interactive space to include fencing, ground cover, and interactive play and display features in front of the Children's Museum on property zoned public community and located at 813 North Carson Street, APN 002-164-01, based on the findings and subject to the conditions of the approval contained in the staff report.
We have a motion by Commissioner Borges. We have a second. Commissioner Preston?
I'd like to second that, please.
Thank you. We have a second. All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you. Good luck. SUP-18-083 for possible action to consider a request for a special use permit for an 11,407 square foot expansion to Fremont Elementary School on property zone public located at 1511 Firebox Road, APN 010-041-30. That's 030. It says here.
It says 03 on the other.
Oh, okay. I'm reading the agenda. I'm sorry. It does say 03 in the motion. I'm not sure which one of those
is
correct.
We looked it up. Oh, 30. Sorry, got thrown off by 30. Okay, the expansion will accommodate 8 additional classrooms, restrooms, a mechanical room, storage room, and offices. There are currently 550 students attending the school. With the expansion, the school will be able to accommodate 650 students, so an extra 100 people. The special use permit is required as the property is owned public. When you consider the special use permit, you're considering the 7 findings of fact. Staff has reviewed the findings of fact and was able to make those in the affirmative, and we are recommending approval. Chris Baker from Manhart is present, as well as representatives from the school district, and I'm happy to go more in depth on any of this proposal with the commission.
Questions for staff?
Just for staff or for Manhart, in terms of the condition about the floodplain and raising the elevation 2 feet, if we could talk about that whenever.
Chris Baker with Manhart Consulting here on behalf of the school district. I think you're referring to, I think it's condition 11 or 12. As designed, it does touch an area within the 100-year flood. We're in the process of doing a LOMAR now. So there's a base flood elevation, and there's been upstream modifications that are going to modify that. So we're fine with the condition because we are in process of that. So the base flood elevation will actually change as a result of that LOMAR.
Other questions for staff or for the applicant? You've seen the recommended condition of approval. I think you just mentioned you accept that one, and I imagine you're accepting them all.
Yes, we agree with staff's recommendation for approval and have reviewed and agree with the conditions as laid out.
Thank you. Any other questions? Commissioner Stowell.
What's the timing on this? Would this be done by opening? Well, I can't imagine this year, next year. When would this be done, complete?
I know we're working on plans now. Following school year. Yes.
Started 19 in September. 1819, it'll be 1920.
Correct.
Yeah. Other questions for the applicant? None? Thank you, sir.
Sure.
Bring it back. First of all, public comment. Is anyone wish to comment on this particular item that's on our agenda? Seeing none, bring it back for a discussion or a motion.
I'll make a motion.
Commissioner Tindall.
I move to approve SUP-18-083, a request for a special use permit for an 11,407 square foot expansion to Fremont Elementary School on property zoned public, located at 1511 Firebox Road, APN 010-041-30, right? Based on the findings and subject to the conditions of approval contained in the staff report.
We have a motion from Commissioner Tingle. Do we have a second? Commissioner Stowe, all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? That was easy. Okay. Thank you. Moving on. For possible action to consider a request for a special use permit for a 12,580 square foot expansion to Mark Twain Elementary School on property zoned public located at 2111 Carriage Crest Drive, APN 002-101-46. Is that?
Okay. This expansion will accommodate 7 additional classrooms, intervention rooms, restrooms, a mechanical room, and storage rooms. 3 modular classrooms will be removed as part of this project. There are currently 620 students attending the school. With the expansion, the school will be able to accommodate 650 students. The special use permit is required because the property is owned public. Again, when you consider a special use permit, you need to consider the 7 required findings of fact and be able to make each of the 7 findings in the affirmative. The staff has been able to make the findings in the affirmative and is recommending approval. Chris Baker from Manhart is here along with the team from the school district, and I'm happy to go more in depth in any part of this application that the commission should want. Thank you.
Any questions for staff? Commissioner Stowell.
To staff or to the applicant, why only 3 out of the 4 modulars are being taken out? Because usually with these construction projects, the idea is to try and remove all the modulars.
Mark Cornick, Director of Operations, for the record. One of the storage units abuts a playground area and is built to that playground area with a deck area, and we need a little bit more space for PE storage and playground equipment. Balls and those kind of things will be used in there, and then possibly if it's rainy out, that they could do a low impact class in that area. Thank you.
Questions for staff or for the applicant? Seeing none, public comment. If anyone wish to comment on this particular item on our agenda. Seeing none, I'll bring it back. Sure.
So I want to know how far.
Would you state your name for us, please?
I'm sorry. My name's Lucille Cowan, and I live at 2172 South Ridge Court.
Okay.
So I want to know how far back this school is going to expand, because there is a chain link fence between my backyard and the school playground. And also, I would like to know if we could put up a wood fence in our area of the backyard, so that way we don't have to deal with the school, seeing the school. Is that good?
If if either staff or the applicant want to respond to that, possibly. How far back it's going to come and how close to that fence, and then you heard the other part of the question.
Chris Baker with Manhard Consulting here on behalf of the school district. I don't know the exact number of how many linear feet the school is expanding, but to put it in context, the grass area really won't be disturbed that's there now. It's really just going to be the area that is now multi-purpose and other play equipment that is all going to be kind of relocated as part of this expansion. So as far as proximity to her unit, you know, it's not going to be nearly impacting it, I think,
so
as much as she's assuming.
There's grass area now between her property.
Correct.
And
yeah, the whole playground area is between.
It's not going to go into that. It's going to go into the playground area, but not the grass area.
Correct.
So there.
I can show you plans. Right here.
Mr. Chair, just in terms of numbers. Mr. Chair, for Chris, I have the number. It's going to be 164 feet. The building will be 164 feet from the property line. And in terms of, are you allowed to put up a solid wooden fence? The answer is yes. You can have a 6-foot solid wooden fence along your back property line. If that's something you choose to do, that would be allowed.
Any other public comment? Okay, if not, we'll bring it back for a motion or discussion or a motion. Commissioner Borders?
I'll make a motion. I move we approve SUP 18-084, a request for a special use permit for 12,580 square feet extension of the Mark Twain Elementary School on property zoned public, located at 2111 Carriage Crest Drive, APN 002-101-46, based on the findings and subject to the conditions of approval contained in the staff report.
Second.
And before we move forward, I'm not sure if I asked if you accepted the conditions on this one as well. I don't think I had, just to verify.
For the record, Chris Baker with Manhard Consulting. We do agree with staff's recommendation for approval and are in agreement with the conditions as set forth.
Great. Thank you.
And so my motion stands.
So we have... Moving on, the next item for possible action to continue to the meeting of July 25th, 2018, a request for a zoning map amendment to change the effective date of a zoning map amendment from agriculture to a mixed single family 6,000 general commercial multifamily apartment and multifamily duplex to become effective upon the transfer of ownership of the sale of the property from the Myers Family Exempt Trust. The property is located at 2200 East 5th Street, APNs 010-041-38, 010-041-52, and 010-041-71. Again, this is to continue this item.
It is. They've for record, Lee Plamel, Community Development Director. Hope just stepped out. But city staff has been working with the applicant on this, on some issues and the recommendations we have. So at our recommendation and upon their request, we'd like you to take the action, to, as stated in the memo there, to continue it to the meeting of July, to the Plan Commission meeting of July 25th.
I need to call for public comment on that. If there's anyone in the public wishes to comment on this, even though we're continuing it, seeing none. Okay, bring it back. Do we need to make a motion, Lee?
Okay. One question before we do that.
Go ahead. Any questions for staff?
Is the July 25th meeting date okay with the applicant?
It's at the applicant's request to continue it to the next meeting.
Okay, but just to the next meeting.
Yes.
Okay.
Any other questions for staff? I'll take a motion. Commissioner Borders.
Sorry.
Go ahead.
No, after you. I move to continue item ZMA-18-085 to the Planning Commission meeting of July 25th, 2018.
I'll second.
Commissioner Borders second. All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you. Next, ZCA-18-090. For possible action to make a recommendation to the Board of Supervisors regarding an ordinance amending Title 18 Zoning Apex A Development Standards Division 4 Signs, Section 4.4 Administration of the Carson City Municipal Code to amend regulations related to temporary banners, flags, A-frame signs, and other temporary sign devices, and to modify the definition of frontage of building to make the method of measurement of allowable sign area consistent between shopping centers, other commercial uses, and providing other matters properly related thereto. Staff, please.
I'll be giving a presentation on this one. Lee Plemmel, Community Development Director. So I know signs and temporary signs in particular have been a discussion with the Planning Commission a little bit over the years. More recently, at the request of a board of a supervisor, city supervisor, we scheduled an item for the Board of Supervisors in May to discuss some of their policies, issues, and some general direction on maybe modifying some regulations regarding temporary signs. So they gave some guidance to take away, and generally the issue has focused around temporary signs, specifically the banners, flags, the use of A-frame signs, and the use of inflatable devices. You know, a lot of the discussion has come up, and the comments to us have been about some things that are out there now. So first of all, I do need to note that what you see out there is not necessarily what's allowed. So part, as you see in the staff report, I think, you know, part of it, and we've had some transition on code enforcement. We've had, you know, last summer we had staff that's been here a long time, you know, knew what the regulations are. We're training new staff now, and now's the season when things are out there. So we're transitioning into it. We're on a program now of going out consistently and starting to take care of things. So we expect to see better enforcement. But I think there are still some changes that we can look at with temporary signs in general related to these things. So let me cover those items in particular, just talk a little bit about them. So starting with banners. So although there's no, staff is not recommending any changes to banners, and there wasn't too much discussion about those. Banners are really the baseline, I call it maybe a baseline temporary signage that has been in place in Carson City for a really long time. Being able to put up temporary signage for 30 days in any 90-day period. During the recession, we allowed them more. We allowed them in different locations. But going back a long time, we've allowed these types of temporary banners that are for, you know, generally for promotion, special things. They're allowed within 30 days with any 90-day period. They have to be attached to the building or a permanent structure like a permanent freestanding sign. And there's also some size limitations based on the business or building side, depending on the applicability. So the recommendation from staff is, and all of these are for discussion, and I'm going to go through all these four as they kind of relate together, then maybe come back and ask questions. But our recommendation is to keep those standards the way they are. So moving on to kind of the newer issue is these feather flags, which are covered under flags in our code. However, I think these feather flags have really come into use only within the last decade or so, while our ordinance dates back to 2002. So they weren't really in use that much and probably weren't specifically thought of when we were writing a sign code for flags. Because currently, a business can use one flag per frontage for up to 30 consecutive days in any 90-day period. That's consistent with banners. But there's no locational standards for that. They can use flags that are attached to the building, and there's some limitations on that permanently. So So, you know, the decorative flags that are on a building, they can keep those up year-round with some limitations that are in there. But if they're detached, they have this 30-day in any 90-day period limitation. So the recommendation is to allow one flag per frontage. That's similar, but with no time limitation, but not anywhere on the site, only located within a certain, within recommendation being 20 feet within the business entrance. Those are going to be similar standards we're recommending for A-frame signs, because as that last standard says, that flags may not be used if you're using an A-frame sign, and the converse is true. If you're using an A-frame sign, you can't use a flag. It's one or the other. So let me talk a little bit about where it came up, 20 feet. That seems like some random number. So the issue of the visibility of flags and just kind of the way they look, that for people that don't like the looks of flags as you drive down the corridors, it's because they're along the street, because they're sticking out over the sidewalk and along the street. So allowing them within 20 feet of the building, when you have a parking lot, that these flags and A-frame signs are really should be more pedestrian oriented, or you could see the flag off there but not distracting for the drivers, so that they need to be closer to the building. That's also, so part of the complaints, part of this complaints from the business and property owner groups is that we have different standards for downtown and elsewhere. We're getting treated differently. So these standards are intended to bring the standards consistent everywhere else. So downtown, I'll maybe move on to A-frame signs, which are generally those same regulations. So downtown, basically you can't have an A-frame sign anywhere except downtown, but in downtown you can have them, and they can be on the sidewalk in front of your business, which is 20 feet wide, up to 20 feet wide. And there's specific location standards for that. So with that 20 feet being applied to any other business in the city, they are being treated the same as the businesses downtown. And so when people are in a shopping center parking lot and get out, they can utilize these flags and A-frame signs to attract those pedestrians, primarily pedestrians, into the businesses. And so as I said, I've covered the A-frame signs there too. And like I said, you can use one or the other, but not both at the same time. And that was kind of based on some direction we got from the Board of Supervisors. The last thing is inflatable devices. I've heard the comments, not everybody likes that there's inflatable devices being used in certain places. But again, I think a lot of that is a lack of enforcement. I think if you see them occasionally, and I think even the sign professionals I've talked to, that these temporary signs are effective when they're actually temporary. If they're there all the time, they just become part of the landscape. Which is the purpose of temporary signs, to draw attention to some special event or things. So the regular business, the standard is to be able to use these for 3 days within any 30-day period, basically within any month. That's clearly not being followed right now, but enforcement is out there now. They're going to be out this week. On top of that issue, it is a little bit longer for car dealers. They can't be higher than the buildings. I know there's some violations out there regarding that we need to address as well. But I think with enforcement and that 3 days in any month, you'll see these occasionally. Not everybody likes them, and you might have some discussion on that. But I think they're a tool for the businesses. I'm kind of looking, from the businesses side as well. I think you'll hear from the businesses that these things for certain events are useful and help attract people to the businesses. So just to summarize the proposed changes for your discussion, I put all those four things up there. That's just a short summary of all of those. I know we have some people from the business community in the audience that might have some things to add to this discussion as well. Those are the recommendations from staff, and you're welcome to make other recommendations based on the discussion today to the Board of Supervisors regarding temporary signs in general.
Most of what I was just looking around today, and there's nothing with inflatables on location, right? They can be out on the street. They can be, I've seen them, you know, one of the car dealers had one going, one of the shaky guys out on by the street in the back of one of the pickups. I mean, so there's nothing on location or how close the building or whatever, blocking view or turning or whatever.
Well, I would say, correct, there's no locational standards in terms of proximity or attached to building for those temporary inflatable devices. However, we do look at if they ever block the visibility at a driveway, which would be the most common, to block visibility for a driveway, we can certainly go out and address that. That's pretty rare with inflatable devices, but certainly if that was a problem, we could have them move.
And often the big ones are, you know, like if the radio station's on your property, I mean, that's not a problem. They're there one day or a few hours, and then they're gone. The other thing I noticed in the flag issue, it was up to 6 feet, whatever. Most of the flags I saw are much larger than that, going down, you know, some of them are 10 or 12 feet tall themselves.
It's 12 square feet, which right. is still about 6 foot flag, not 6 feet tall total. It's a 6 foot flag.
Yeah, but again, that's like a small flag. The big ones we're seeing now would not be allowed.
There are bigger ones than that would not be allowed, correct.
It seems to me that it would be somewhat easier to try and get these, again, on the same, to be consistent standards for all of these temporary signs, to not make a distinction that the inflatables could be 3 days or the banners could be up for 30 days, to see if there's a way to come up with a common time frame for all of these. Two questions. One, do people have to apply for these temporary signs? Because I think that would help with enforcement, so you know exactly when they're going to put those up, the banners or the flags. The other thing is that these are supposed to be temporary, so I would be hesitant to support the flags, the feather flags, being allowed permanently. I think they should be temporary. They are not meant to be permanent signs. They get frayed. They look ridiculous. So that they should have a time limit, as well as the banners and the A-frames. And certainly with the A-frames, I have no problem in allowing more A-frames as long as they are taken in at night when that business closes. I know that certainly during the summer months, there's a business on Curry Street that has been known to put its A-frame sign on Carson Street. It's a bookstore. Schoenberg name nameless. But certainly people sometimes have abused those A-frames and put them out, you know, on other streets that have nothing to do with where their business location is. So I would just see if there's a way. I'm not sure the banners have to be up there for 30 days. The banners are not only promotional, they're, you know, charity events, you know, that we see across Carson Street, but I don't know that they have to be up there for 30 days. But I'm just thinking that if we can standardize those time frames for all these temporary signs, it might be easier in the long run. But I don't think the feather flags should be permanent. They should be temporary. They're not meant to be permanent signs. Thanks.
Well, and the nice thing about one thing about this is they can have an A frame or a flag, not 30 flags on 30 feet across the front of their property out on the street. So I mean, and it's and I know talking to staff and that the 30 to 90 day is so difficult, because I said the same thing. Do they put in? Well, how do you know when they put it out there? So we're doing away with that on the A-frames and the flags, because they can have one flag or one A-frame out at any time. That's it.
Is it okay? Can I address that? You want to address that first, some of those? You talked about common time frames. So since you brought that up, our code enforcement staff would be happy that I bring this up as an alternative that they threw out there. What if like it was just, for example, the month of June, you could do whatever you want, and then the rest of the time you can't do anything. Everything's prohibited. I mean, I say that a little tongue-in-cheek, but
they wouldn't have a job
in terms
long.
Of in terms of ease of enforcement. That's either everything being prohibited or anything being allowed is the easiest thing to enforce, right? Because if it's there, it's gone. In terms of common time frames, it's still easier to – one of the reasons with the staff we have, one of the reasons is for trying to find out the appropriate location and not having them take them down. Like for A-frame signs, like downtown, they're permitted all the time. So again, I think in terms of that, just trying to be fair, as long as they're small signs, pedestrian oriented, up against the building, it's easy to see that they're near the building and they're permitted without having to come back 30 days later to see if it's still there, and then tell them if it's still there, tell them, okay, you got to take them down now. I got to give you a few days to do that, or before we write a citation. So there's some time, and when there's time limits, I agree there's some time involved and staff work involved. Which, in terms of permit, so leading to the next step, taking that permit thing, I think that would be another. I'm not sure that would help us in enforcement, and it would certainly be another level of staff time in processing permits and figuring out. So we thought about that too, but I thought, are you going to make the businesses then pay for that permit, for staff time processing permits, or is that just another bit of staff time that we're going to eat up for enforcement? I don't really have a good answer for that. And the off-premise signs are certainly prohibited. Code enforcement, we've been chasing those around, so they show up and somebody goes and moves them, and the standards would require them to be taken in, not during business hours. Yeah.
Commissioner Preston.
First of all, I guess that everybody takes a vacation in June, so I'm going to say that. The next thing that I wanted to ask is, can I request that we take each one of these items separately and that we could discuss them separately, because each of them are different animals completely and we have different uses. Now, it's my understanding in the downtown area that a special use permit is actually part of that, because I was talking to the owners of Kaleidoscope. They told me they have a special use permit for their signage.
So, no, for the downtown, there's not a special use permit or other permit required for A-frame signs. They're permitted by right. Downtown also has encroachment permits, which they could be talking about, to have displays and tables outside. And if your permanent signage exceeds a certain area, that could also be a special use permit.
Well, I know the car dealer, newer car dealer across from Ford down by Raley's, part of their special use permit, you'll know that the frames, they can use those. They haven't, they did when they first opened, but they haven't been recently, but that was part of theirs to allow them to use those. So, Mr. Tingle.
So I have a little bit of concern about the A-frame signage, the 20-foot requirement from the front of the business. So say the shopping center where the grocery outlet is, where A to Zen and Bulldog Computer and the Nail Place and Evergreen Jeans, all that area. So if they are required to have a 20-foot limitation on where they can have their A-frame sign, that is not going to be too terribly effective for those businesses that are on the east side of that shopping center. Because if you're coming 20 feet out, then you're in the parking lot, and nobody from the street is going to be able to see that signage. So, you know, I just don't feel that that's a fair measurement, if you will, for that signage between the downtown area and those areas that have setbacks from the main street.
But again, there, Commissioner, I think the idea was, those A-frame signs are designed for people that are walking along, you know, going to see what's on the menu, going to see what's on sale. It's not designed for people from the street to be able to read them as they're driving by.
But so, even if you're walking down Carson Street, which there's a lot of foot traffic in that particular section of road, I know, because I have walked my dog around that section a lot of times. So if you're walking that sidewalk and the A-frame is 20 feet from the front of the business, you're still not going to see it if you're walking the sidewalk, because it's far enough setback that you unless you're actually really looking for it, you're not going to know that it's there. So that's, you know, my only feeling about that is there needs to be some sort of criteria better than a 20-foot setback.
One thing that I'm very well aware of with the different retail centers and so forth is most of them actually have built-in sign criteria that they give their lessees. And it's, for instance, I know with Jared Chow's property, he has signage that they have signage on the frontage. They also have a pylon sign, but they do not allow the flags, but now they're cropping up. But I know that they've had problems with them in the past, but as part of it becomes a lease violation for them. In addition to that, if you were to take an A-frame sign, those sidewalks there are not wide enough for the ADA and an A-frame sign. So that is, again, a problem. And if they're at the driving entrances, most of the time, that's where you actually have your ADA transition apron. So I'm looking at this going, a pile of signs blown over in Carson City wind and flags. I mean, that just is insane to me. So.
I want to be clear that these standards are written to limit signs being visible from drivers going down the commercial corridors. It's to limit the visibility. I mean, the response of this is that what we see today is not attractive to the community, all the flags and signs out there. And so they are written to limit it. Furthermore, as I say in here, I think you see flags. You can certainly see flags, and it draws attention. You can't necessarily read what it says. But A-frame signs at the size limit in particular are not appropriate for speeds on the corridor. Downtown for pedestrians, they're not I didn't provide all the examples, but you take pictures of them. They're not of a size that are intended to be attention getters for drivers.
So I'm sorry, is the speed limit different between Bath Street and Fifth Street? Is it, or Winnie Lane and Fifth Street? It's still 25, right? 25 miles per hour from Bath to Fifth.
Yeah, the speed limit's the same, okay, but but that's only a section, and then it gets to be 45, and it's 35, and it's 40, and 5, and 50 in different places. And downtown is two lanes, so it's narrow. So I think if you looked at actual speeds, they're lower. It's narrow. It's pedestrian oriented. I'm saying that's the purpose. If you can certainly make a recommendation to the board if you want more signs.
Even downtown, if there's cars parked there, you can't see the sign in front of the business anyway. So it still meant I went back and watched the meeting with the supervisors in May when they were discussing these, and as staff and Lee presented at that time, the A-frame signs are designed basically for foot traffic. You're walking in front of the store, you're whatever, and you say, oh, they got dog food, whatever, on sale. So you go in, but it's not designed. Again, we're trying to clear up what's out there now.
Yeah, I'm not blind to the fact that those are visible to the cars. And downtown, you're generally stopped more downtown, although it flows at certain times. But they're available to cars. They're visible from cars downtown, but generally it's a different environment.
And I brought up the same thing that you're referencing, Commissioner Preston, the fact that if you've got a 6-foot sidewalk, you can't put an A-frame sign out there because the ordinance says you have to have. So do you then put the sign just on the edge of the parking lot, just off the sidewalk, which leaves the sidewalk open? And I think that could be a possibility. I don't know how, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, but it's into landscape.
Go ahead.
Okay, I'm sorry. I have to put my little property manager hat on. And it says, now you're putting a sign into the landscaping. We're trying to go ahead and create some landscaping, some green strips. Or you're actually into parking spaces. So you have an encroachment any way you go on it. I think my biggest concern is not so much A-frame signs, because we don't really have that many A-frame signs out of the downtown corridor. I think what my concern is more banners that are frayed, that are, you know, doing beer or whatever. They're not for a special event. I mean, I'm excited that Coors for a 12-pack is really cheap. You know, that's not where I think that's important, or I could get my cigarettes for $5 a pack. That, to me, is not a special use. The in regards to the feathered flags, I know that I did a lot of work in Sparks and in Reno. They do actually have special use permits for things like the feathered flags, only for things like grand openings and that type of thing. And it's limited as to what day are you going to put it up, what day are you going to take it down. And it's actually a cost back to the business owner. And so, you know, I look at that and say, then that way, if they've got skin in the game, maybe they'll get rid of it, too, you know, especially if there's any kind of fine type of things that are involved. The inflatables, I mean, the thing is as long as they don't collect, they're not a visibility issue, I don't think that they're a real problem. And they've actually changed a lot of the balloons into those more rigid type of balloons that don't blow away and end up all over the place. So, I don't know, I think that, and my other concern too is that as a real estate broker too, I also use banners sometimes for leased properties and things like this, and they're affected. They are, you know, affected by the sun and that type of thing, but is that banner that I use for an available for a building that is hooked on a stucco wall because I can't make a wall penetration, is that going to be looked put right into here too. So that's another concern.
Well, and my other question on the banner too is if you've got the Coors banner up for 30 days, you put it down and put up the $5 cigarettes, only it's only a banner on the building for 30 days. I had clarified that with them as well. So Commissioner Borders?
Yes.
The other side.
Yeah. The crux of the matter is we can spend half our life trying to write sign ordinances, and the major part is enforcement. If we don't have the enforcement, people tend to comply if they know what the rules are, but they also need to know that we enforce it. And I think until we start to enforce it a little better, it's going to be harder to put some of these things in process. You know, I've seen, apartment houses have got 37 banners or feather flag flying up front, but they have them now, and they, you know, an insurance agent's got his banner on his fence post. There's just so much non-compliance that I think that's part of our frustration. And now the other piece of my puzzle is that we're not addressing the mechanical sign, the domino guy that stands out there, or does
right,
this?
Well, we'll take care of that. That's prohibited.
Yeah. Okay, that's fine. That's great. But it's not addressed in here at all.
That's because they're prohibited.
So there it is. It's not addressed in the ordinance because it doesn't need to be because it's a portable sign by in the definitions which are prohibited.
Okay. And then back here when we're talking about signage per unit in an A-frame sign or a ground-mounted sign, it says if you have a ground-mounted sign on the sidewalk, it must have at least 8 feet of clearance for the pedestrians to walk underneath it. Any flag displayed above a pedestrian area shall provide at least 6 feet of unimpeded clearance. So if I have a feathered flag on a sidewalk, it's got to be at least 6 feet off the ground before I have any feather. Yeah, does it, so why don't we just say that? I'm back there on paragraph T. 18. It just seems like that whole little section, I understand what we're trying to do, but it's not very clear. You know, if I want to put a feathered flag in the downtown area, it looks like I can't do it. I can have an A-frame down there, but it does, but it says I can have a feathered flag, but I can have a feathered flag if it's 6 feet off the ground.
But you can set it out from the building up to 20 feet, so it's, you want to walk under it, it's freestanding.
But if it's in the pedestrian area.
So you either have to have 6 feet lateral clearance, or if it's over, it has to be an 8 foot clearance, and those are just basic sidewalk standards. So it's 6 feet either you have 6 feet, horizontally.
You're talking about horizontal.
And if you squeeze it, and if you squeeze it below 6 feet, it has to be over six feet over. It has to allow for 8 feet of clearance.
Okay.
Like up in BC, when you're walking and they got the signs, are high enough up.
It's just
walk
it's confusing. It's confusing. It's almost too much for a temporary. I would just rather say don't. I'm almost agree with the with the code enforcement. And again, but my first point is my last point. I think regardless of what we do, we're only as good as however we enforce it. And I think we need to enforce it better, or whatever we write is
And again, having watched that supervisor meeting, I then the other day met one of the code enforcement gentlemen. I believe he said they have 85 30-day that are coming up tomorrow or the next day, that they're out there, the new people are, and they're on it, and they're trying to clear it up. And is that what I like the best about this is the fact that you aren't going to see four donut signs sitting out in the rocks along the main freeway for a shop that's back in there. He could have one donut sign or one A-frame sign. If it worked for him, fine. If it doesn't, fine. I do agree, and we all know if you're in business that advertising is important. I mean, it can help bring business in, but we want to make sure it's done properly, easy to enforce, and it's cleaned up and done right. Commissioner Preston.
The donut guy can't have it because it's not within 20 feet of his space.
Staff, before I open it up for public comment. Public comment. Would anyone like to come forward and speak on this? Feel free.
I can see my name is Bill Horn, and I can see you have a lot of issues, much more than I thought would be with this. I want to make a couple comments. Number one, I think that having everything standard for the whole of Carson City is where it should be, that when you have downtown have different standards than the rest of us, it tends to take a look at favoritism. Your concerns about the 20 feet from the building is very valid, and I would share that. I think the measurement is wrong. I think the measurement should be from the street in, and therefore you would preserve your sidewalk by definition of where the thing should be, and by measuring from the street, not from the building, you don't have to take all these exceptions. In other words, if a building were 10 feet from the street, just using an example, and you could use 10 feet, then you have to back them off through exceptions. If you say from the street, you're going to have to displace the sign from the street for a certain length, then you can have a standard thing, and it doesn't matter whether the building is close to the street or set back. And so I'm going to suggest that the definition of where the signs could be would be changed, not from the building, but from the street, so that it would be the same for everybody without having to make lots of different exceptions based upon how the buildings are set up. So, thank you.
My name is Gene Munnings, and I own Evergreen Jeans on North Carson Street, and our business sits back 342 feet from Carson Street. I measured it. I measured with my feet. I went from the door, and you can't go, and when I was in Boy Scouts, we had to figure out what your... And if you stride, I don't know what my stride is anymore, but it used to be 3.5 feet. Because I walk fast. But it's quite a big distance. And then when we had our permit for the plant area, we can't put anything up to, on that sidewalk at all. It has to stay because it's exactly 6 foot wide. And then if we put any signs, it would be in the middle of the parking lot. I've used this one, but I don't put it out very often because I put a sandbag in there because of the wind. It's, I put it back from the street 6 feet and about 8 feet from the driveway so that it's nobody. It's not in any ways to hurt, and it just has the arrow. And, I have, and this comes off at Christmas. It says Christmas trees. That's the only thing on it. And I only put it out when it's not windy or going to be windy because it will fall over, and I don't want it to be in hindrance of anything. And only on certain days. The days that we're only there short time, no. But the long days that we're there, I'll put it out and then take it in at night. I never leave anything out at night. And that's the way I think it should be. Nobody should leave signs out at night. Because then there's no effect. If the business is closed, why should you have a sign out? And this is just very simple. When the guy drew this up at Sign Pro, just simple and arrow, that's all. It, you have to be short and simple to draw traffic. Okay?
Bring it back for any further discussion or... Again, I'm just, what are we trying to accomplish? And I think what we're trying to accomplish is to clean it up to where along the streets we don't have all kinds of flags and signs and everything else that are out there. And I think, again, I agree with standardization. I believe that the rest of the city and obviously the public's all agree as well. I wish everyone did what your people did and it was in their lease as to what could be there or not. Because they probably read the sign standards and make sure they follow them. So, but again, I think this is a move in the right direction. By whether it's the, I don't know if there is a pure cure at this point. Enforcement's important. It looks like that's going to be happening more. But again, trying to simplify it as much as we can to where you're not going, okay, it's been 30 days here. Wait, this guy just put another one out here. Now we got to start a calendar on him. They can have one flag or one A-frame for by their building, or they can have a banner on their building, as long as I believe the banners have to be kept in good condition, et cetera. And do they have the right on that, Lee, to staff or enforcement to say that banner needs to be replaced or whatever, or cleaned up, or if it's tattered or?
Oh, right, yes, there's a maintenance, there's a general maintenance clause. And in fact, we sent them out on, someone was pointed out it was really bad. It wasn't just tattered, but where there wasn't a sign in a thing. But yes, there's maintenance, and so we can make sure they're not tattered.
Okay, well, you have one of these slides for all four categories. All right. If we looked at this one, does anybody have any objections to that?
Nope.
Okay, so we got banners. Let's try the next one.
I do not think the flags should be allowed without a time limit. They are not durable materials, and I think it's crazy to say that the flags can be up without any time limitation. It should be temporary, like all these other types of flags.
I like your point here that it should be 20 feet from the street back. The only thing is because otherwise, especially if you end up with a lot of these shopping areas or things like this, we do not have the sidewalk so that you can actually do that under a lot of our different shopping centers. They don't have that. They don't have a place to stick a flag. What they'll do is instead of you sticking a flag, they'll put it in one of those little iron things that are a tow baker, and or they put sandbags and other garbage and stuff like that around them. If it can't go in the ground, then it really shouldn't be there, as far as I'm concerned, is with the flag. And I do like it where it cannot be used with an A-frame. So,
problem is with the flag or whatever at 20 feet from the street. We're right back with the donut flags and everything are out on the street.
I mean, it's just, I don't know, you know, it's really a quandary. It's really a quandary because the fact is that if you're only allowed one, I think that's some important. You're either allowed a banner, an A-frame, a flag sign, or what is the other thing we're looking at?
Inflatable.
Yeah. Oh, well, yeah, I'm going to do the inflatable.
Are you going to allow them to put an A-frame then out within 20 feet of the street instead of having it back by their building?
The only problem is if it's back by their building, and most of the buildings that we have around here, the difference with the downtown, and I understand you don't want a differentiation between the two, is that the sidewalks downtown are larger and more expansive than the sidewalks that are, you know, in our other parts of our corridor. So from 5th Street South and from basically Washington.
Highway 50?
Yeah, Highway 50 North, the sidewalks are not as wide as they are on the in the corridor. So that's what differentiates the downtown from the other area.
The current regulation, there is no on-site, there's no reason to change it then. There's no on-site location limitation, so they could put it anywhere, basically. So you're going to say it's got to be 20 feet off the street instead of just any place they want to put it. But you're still going to have to keep track of every banner and every A-frame out there for 30 to 90 days and two.
There's a difference. Physically, they can't be in most places. Most places are not going to take an A-frame and put it into an area that a customer could park. Most people are not going to be putting an A-frame out into, you know, into any kind of a driveway area, this type of thing. What you're looking at is you're looking at the difference from the business, but it's got to have some practicality too.
Well, as an example, in the case of a nursery, he actually has displays out into that parking lot. It would be the building, or would it be off the end of where his display area is? It has to be right by that, or it would have to be in. Because I remember when we addressed this earlier, and he was not allowed to put anything storage or anything on the walks, whatever, because of the narrow walkway.
So that has a special use permit for that outside display that has specific conditions. But to answer your question, if this was applied in location from the building, it's from the building, not measured from other outdoor displayed area. If you utilize the 20 feet from the building, it would be from the building, not other outside display area. But yeah, that as it's written. But I would say something that says measured from the right of way is enforceable and visible as well. I don't think there'd be any additional difficulty enforcement measuring from that side than the other.
I believe we addressed signage for him because of that limitations on that special use permit, that he was allowed to do some displays out on his racks and that sort of thing. So you think this would be workable?
This proposed regulation says 20 feet from the primary business entrance. That's the door, mm-hmm. Not the driveway. So it's the door of the business, not the driveway, not the entrance to the parking lot. Okay.
But he's Lee's saying that they could do a measurement into the, how did you word that, Lee, just a little bit ago? They could still have one A-frame or one flag or one A-frame, and it would be in the right-of-way.
What I was just saying, no. The measurement from the street, whatever that distance is a workable solution in terms of enforcement. It's visible. If it's 20 feet, you know roughly that's a parking spot back from the sidewalk, so that if something's sitting right next to the sidewalk, you know that doesn't meet the setback. Something that's easy like that is enforceable.
Or we could do an either or, 20 feet from the door or measured whatever.
Well, no, I don't think you do an either or. I mean, I think you would. That's a good question. I have to think about that, because in some cases buildings are closer and it has to be within 20 feet of the door or 20. We could write that. If that's what you vote, I get the intent of that. We'd have to think about how that's written so that it's.
It would be whatever works sensibly for all concerned kind of thing, how you measure.
If the building's within 20 feet, it needs it. It has to be within 20 feet of the street. So we have to take that in consideration of writing it, but to have a standard, I think it's meeting the intent of what we're getting at in the recommendation. If you have a 20-foot, the standard is 20-foot setback from the street, and there's some exceptions when the building is closer that we figure out to write in there.
Because I do like what we're gaining here with the one flag or one A-frame and not having to keep track of days. And if it's tattered or whatever, and it's taken in at night, and whatever, you know, we know all that. So I think it's worth it.
So I'm gathering from this discussion that we're really not ready to vote on language yet. If there still needs to be some clarification from the city about what's allowed. So 20 feet setback from the street unless your building is closer than 20 feet. I mean, how do you do the either or?
Oh, I was just saying, I don't think we need to wordsmith something if we get the gist of what you're trying to get at. But downtown, nobody downtown can have a sign, an A-frame sign that's more than 20 feet from the street.
Okay, just for my clarification, so what is considered downtown? Is it 50?
There's a downtown mixed-use zoning district that's defined on a map. It's basically from William Street, and it actually goes past Fifth Street to the south, but it's defined on a map. But so in the core, I mean, in the older part, there is no front yard. There's the building, and then there's the sidewalk and the street. And so I'm saying there needs to be, and that may be the case somewhere else. It's not just the case downtown. There's other places where the building is up against the street right of way, and in those cases they can't be set back, but they still must be placed within 20 feet of the building frontage.
Like your shops on Curry Street and stuff, they've got a little lawn. They can set an A-frame in the lawn or put a banner in the lawn. It's still going to be within 20 feet of the door, and it's going to be off the sidewalk and away from the street. So it cures a lot of areas. So.
Okay, so if we solve flags and banners, what's next? A-frame.
That's kind of all the same with this.
Have you solved flags?
Well, we solve flags if we can agree on whatever the words come out about the distance.
Yeah, I don't know. Is everybody comfortable measuring back some distance back from the street as along the corridors in general?
My concern is that the A-frames are in some way a different animal, because the A-frames, the business, the restaurants, whoever, they can put that out every day. Right now, if they're, you know, the soup place, you know, on McFadden Plaza, they're going to say we're having this kind of soup, or the Fox is saying we're doing whatever. But they're taking that in. But these other things should be, to me, promotional, special promotional events, not on a regular, you know, putting these things up every 30 days is absurd. They should be promotional, temporary events versus the A-frame sign, which is a business downtown, or if we're going to have it anywhere in the city. I think with these other, the inflatables, the banners, it's promotional. It's a one-time thing. It is not meant to be done on a repetitive basis. And I think that's different from the A-frames. But I agree that you should not be allowed to have the inflatables and the feathers, and it's just ridiculous. But it should be a promotional event.
So say, for example, like La Posada Real on College Parkway. They have a lunch special. $7.99, and they had flags out for, well, and they had flags that were looking some of the worst for wear, but those flags were out consistently, and so it's not like it's a occasional promotional thing because it's a $7.99 lunch forever until they change the price. So what do you do about those types of one flag and only for 30 days and then?
Well, actually, one flag within 20 feet or an A-frame, and if he's got an A-frame advertising his menu, then he doesn't have a flag. So he's going to have one or the other within 20 feet or a certain distance from the street, and that's all he's going to have.
Okay, now that brings up the other question is size. Because what are the size of the A-frames? What is the size of the banners?
Banners are 12 square feet, which is 2x6, is a standard small flag. Banners, is there a size limitation on banners?
There's size limitations based on the size of the business. I was serious when I asked if you'd figured out flags because you moved on. So can you go down the list and
because
I've heard time limits or not, I think you have to decide those things up there. I think we have the frontage.
My feeling is the flags, from what we're authorizing and what I'm seeing, I didn't see a single 2x6-foot flag on all my driving around today. They were bigger and plastic poles waving around. If I had my druthers, there wouldn't be any flags. I think the A-frame is doing advertising for pedestrian traffic, and the banners on the building that may be doing some advertising to help them sell whatever. I don't have a problem with that. But my problem is with the flags, because most of them, with our wind conditions, are either getting tattered very quick or, they're bending around and falling down and whatever. I don't like the flags. And actually, half the time you can't read what's on them, because they're moving so much. Does it say a sale? Does it say a subway? Whatever. We don't, you can't. If I had my idea, I would recommend no flags at all. Because if you're not going to allow those 3x10 or 12 foot things that are blowing around out there now, maybe by doing the size limitation, they'll say they aren't worth it. They're too small. You can't see them. There won't be any flags. Or do we just say, I don't think you should have flags?
I would support that.
Again, I think the inflatables and the A-frames and the banners do serve a purpose. And I think they're fairly easy to monitor. And again, they could have an A-frame out front. There's no flag. I don't think you can say you can have an A-frame or a banner, because the A-frame might be advertising their menu, where the banner might be advertising who they are. It can be used. But flags, if you read them, how often, oil change or whatever. Go ahead.
The only flags that I've seen that actually have a specific event purpose in Carson City are the monthly wine walk. Those are the only ones that actually say wine walk. They're only in front of the businesses that are doing and participating in the wine walk. And they're only out on the Friday night before, then it's out on this, and then it's the Saturday, and then they go away.
And I believe one of the supervisors mentioned it, the flags. For special events, let them have the flags. If it's going to be for the epic bike ride, they can put some, whatever, for that event or something like that. But to allow flags just day in and day out to be all lining our streets and parkways, blowing everywhere, I don't think we need them.
If you restrict flags to promotional events, how are you going to define a promotional event?
Staff or Commissioner President?
Well, for like downtown, people literally get special event permits for downtown. So when they're used in conjunction with those things, like the wine walk or Taste of Downtown or things, those are special events by definition.
But other people might consider
that they have a special event in their shopping center, and that's a special event, and they need a flag. That's not a special event that comes through the business license department to get a permit for that.
Yeah, but if we're going to totally restrict flags to just promotion, then we need to be able to let everybody know what a promotion is. If I'm opening up a new anything, I may want to have a flag out there.
During 3 days.
It's fine, whatever it is. But I mean, how do they know, or how do they know what they can and can't do? That's what we're trying to define.
Do it like the inflatables, where isn't it a max of 3 days? Mm-hmm. If there's an event and they want to put a flag out within a certain distance, whatever, for 3 days, and then it comes down. That's it. I don't know if that helps or works, or I'd still go back to just no flags.
You asked about enforcement, so I will say that 3 days, so 30 days is at least manageable, because you every 30 days you can go out. There's people that are going to put it up the day after they do that. You do your first enforcement, and they're going to get some extra time because you're not going to catch it till 30 days later. But to have to go out every 3 days would be harder. Even though that's what it is for the inflatables. But the inflatables aren't ubiquitous. I mean, they're not everywhere like the flags are. The flags are really easy to get and cheap and stick in the ground.
If there's support, I would go with no flags. A-frames and inflatables and flags just...
Or just say the flags only with the special event permits, period.
If I was not in the downtown area, could I come in and get a special event permit for my business?
Yes.
Okay, so then that would work. If I wanted to have a
my
special...
My wife at Greenhouse, you know, they put on their art show, whatever. They go get a permit and have a special event. I'm hearing that on the flags, only for special events with a special event permit. And so we've done the banners and inflatables we've done, and the A-frames.
Yeah,
again, the measurement we could address, or from the street or from the building. You had talked about adjusting the measurement situation on the A-frame. Go ahead, Commissioner Preston.
This is going to seem really petty, but the other day at my car was parked over at the farmer's market when it wasn't a farmer's market day, and somebody moved an A-frame and scratched the whole side of my brand new car with the red stuff from the sign.
So what I'm saying is
if there's going to be A-frames and they're going to be in public areas, who's going to have the liability?
I think it would be the owner of the A-frame, wouldn't it? Their business insurance or whatever, something like that.
So except for the downtown, where the buildings are right up to the property line and the public is out front, you can't be putting these signs on private property. I mean on public property. Yeah, they shouldn't be on the sidewalk. They can't be on the sidewalk at all, actually, by definition and other regulations. They need to be behind the sidewalk.
On the A-frames, where one sign per frontage, no time limit, but must be located, and then they will be brought in at night, which we talked about, and we don't have to worry about, may not be used with a flag, I guess, unless if it's a special event, there might be a flag out there. I don't know. Do we even need
well,
to
so, so I, you did want to have a little discussion separate with the A-frame signs. Is your preference close to the building or to measure starting from the street, do the 20-foot setback from the street, okay.
Well, it's appropriate for the buildings too far back, okay. I would imagine.
I would be in the minority on that, because I think the A-frames should be close to the business entrance. Mm-hmm. And I think if you're too far away from the street, as some of the, going north on Carson, then I would say that, you would have to look at, either a banner or, look at the signage in the shopping mall. you have a shopping mall and the signs should hopefully be there and visible enough versus, you know, having a business that's right up against Carson Street. Yeah, and so I agree.
Commissioner Stillwell, I again, that's from the board meeting and Lee's presentation at that time. The idea of the A-frame is you're going to the business or you're going by the business, mm-hmm. and it's telling you what's happening, either the menu or what's on sale or whatever. It's not meant to draw you from the street to go, oh, there's an A-frame, I'm going to go read it. Okay. You know, I think we want to pull that back from the street and clean up the street is what we're trying, and we just did with the flags majorly. But again, they could put up a banner, you know, up whatever.
And so it was suggested that it come up with some verbiage on the flag. Are we it rewrite it and bring it back to the Planning Commission? Okay.
Did you saw?
That's our recommendation. That's my
Okay, yeah. So to summarize, sorry, the mic was off, so I'll summarize it with in the end, it's staff's recommendation, except that flags are only permitted with a special event permit.
During the special event.
During the special event and with a special event permit from the city.
And are you going to stay with the size of the flags as exist, the small ones, or give them a little more leeway if they, you know, we're
no.
Just, no? Okay, no. Just the standard, what you wrote, correct?
Yeah.
The 6 foot. 2 by 12 feet.
That's your recommendation. That's not.
Go ahead, sir. We've been talking long enough. You'd like to add something.
On the A-frames, I think that the planning department could take a look at the streets and address what a reasonable distance from the streets would be. And I'm not going to say 20 feet because they were talking about the buildings. There, the issues, as you have articulated very well, is that you need space for people on the sidewalk. The A-frames are there because businesses wish to advertise, and so they're looking to have some visibility for people going by their businesses. And if we take a look at the sidewalk needing to be safe and the business wanting to have as much exposure as possible, there would be some optimal place for those things. It would be the same with your downtown, which are right with the sidewalk. You're not going to want downtown to be having a A-frame right on the curb, I don't think, but again, you're talking about where the businesses are and where the buildings are, and you're doing things from the building. The real issue, I think, is how much sidewalk do you have, how far from the street to allow the sidewalk to be used, but still give the business owner some visibility. And as a manager for a center that's got a large setback, having it to the door of the business doesn't give any visibility for normal traffic going by.
Sir, can you identify yourself again?
But 20 feet is the thing you were establishing from the building, and I'm saying that 20 feet from the street may not be exactly the right measurement. I'm thinking that the planning department, if they took a look at it, would come up with a figure that would be more reasonable than 20 feet. Oh, I'm sorry. Bill Horn, H-O-R-N-E. Okay. So, that's all.
In regards to Mr. Horn, you indicated that you're in a center.
He's up where Regine Green is.
Okay. That center, and I'm going to just, you know, kind of go off the top of my head, that center has signage over the front of each one of the doorways.
Mm-hmm.
It also has a pylon monument sign that's utilized by the businesses.
Mm-hmm.
So you have signage to bring you into the business. That's where my concern question is because you actually, with being a participant in that shopping center, have door signage over the top door, and then the signage that's right over the top of the coffee place, right?
Yes.
Okay, so you do have more signage than a lot of people do in this area and a lot of businesses.
Okay, we have.
So
we,
that's my question on that. Just,
okay, you're. It would. It's very difficult on a setback, and I would agree that we don't want drivers distracted. I can tell you that for the businesses that are set back, we do have signage on the buildings, but the signage on the tops of the buildings are not able to be seen from the street for the most part. And the fact that before I became manager it was the way it was is where it's at. The Island Coffee Shop blocks a lot, so that the businesses that are behind the Island Coffee Shop get absolutely nothing. And as far as the A-frame signs, occasionally, and as the manager of the center, the A-frame would have to be located in a spot not directly in front of the existing businesses, because it couldn't be with the coffee shop there. But I would like to be able to find a spot that would not interfere with traffic, but would be, you know.
Would you like me to try a motion?
We sure can try a motion if you'd like.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to move to recommend to the Board of Supervisors approval of an ordinance amending Title 18, Appendix Development Standards, Divisions 4.4, related to the temporary sign regulations as published on the agenda and as recommended by staff, except that the flag portion will only one flag will be permitted for each business with a special event permit for a special event. I think that's what we said.
Kind of what we did. Was it a one flag limit,
yes,
or just the flags were permitted for a special event?
One flag per business for a special event permit. Yes.
Well, it's permitted through the special event. Okay. We have a motion. Do we have
second?
All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Well, thank you.
Well, this will go to the Board of Supervisors probably the first meeting in August. So watch the agenda. Yeah, we're already into July. So.
E
B6 ZCA-18-091 for possible action to make a recommendation to the Board of Supervisors regarding an ordinance amending Title 18 Zoning Chapter 18.03 definition of the Carson City Municipal Code to amend the definition of guest building and amending Title 18 Zoning Appendix A Development Standards Division 1 Land Use and Site Design Section 1.4 Guest Building Development of the Carson City Municipal Code to delete the restriction limiting the occupancy of a guest building to family members or non-paying guests, providing other matters properly related thereto. Staff?
Now we'll do the easy one. Okay, so this code amendment is as written into the record to take out that limitation for guest buildings. Currently, that says it's limited to family members and non-paying guests. So effectively, what that does is would allow a guest building to be rented. So let me give a little bit of the background on this for you and for anybody listening. This has come up out of several discussions over kind of a longer period of time regarding to the affordability of workforce housing in Carson City. There's working groups within the city that are looking at ways to be able to provide housing for our workforce. As you saw in the growth management recently and the cost of housing, things that's going up. If you've heard anything about the cost of housing, you know it's going up. The rents on what were affordable are getting moving up and bumping people down. And so anyway, obviously affordability, it's not an issue that's localized to Carson City by any means. It's regional, it's national. So this workforce group from coming up with a committee of, you know, from the health sector, from the state housing division, from the building sector, one of the things that's come up as possible of doing something very minor in providing affordable housing is to allow guest buildings to be rented. So that's how this came about. This went to the Board of Supervisors as something to pursue. So we're going through the process now to look at it, get recommendations from you, take it to the Board of Supervisors. So just a guest building is, we've allowed guest buildings for a while, and actually they weren't always allowed with kitchens in them. I think it's only since about 2007 or 2002, somewhere in that range, when we actually started allowing them with kitchens at all, and at which time, okay, we're going to allow them with kitchens as long as it's only for families, members, and non-paying guests. So we have a number of them. I think I have in there. It's a number of special use permits that have been issued. And, yeah, I didn't mention and didn't do the research to find how many. There's probably another handful or so that are in the single-family 1 acre where they're permitted by right, and we have permits for them and have the deed restriction. They follow the requirements, but I only researched the special use permits, so there's probably a few more in there than that. So some of the, like I said, so they've been allowed with kitchens for a while. We have those number. They're allowed in those single family half acre and larger lots. They're allowed up to 1,000 square feet. And in the single family 6,000 and 12,000 square foot districts, they're allowed up to 700 square feet. They require these regulations. So even if you take away the limitations on the occupancy, there's still an admin permit or special use permit could be required based just on the size of the unit and for detached structures. Those, we still have provisions for accessory structures and size limitations on those. So if they exceeded those, they may still need a special use permit or administrative permit as applicable. Current requirements also require additional on-site parking for the guest building at one per bedroom. So a house of any size is only required to have two on-site parking spaces. A guest building, in addition to those two on-site, must provide paved on-site parking for one space per bedroom. So that's the current requirement for that. They also, as you have in the ordinance and can see in the current ordinance, that there are setback height and design criteria as well to for neighborhood compatibility and to match the existing residents on the property. And I think I do have one more slide because based on some discussions and thoughts, I have a couple of recommendations to add to it. I'm going to start with the second one first because I thought about that. So this and what that second recommendation is to put 1.4.10 back in the ordinance is proposed to be deleted because that's the part that says it's limited to family members. But to put it back in and to be clear that a guest building may not be rented on a transient basis of less than 28 consecutive days. Arguably, that's the case whether or not it says that because transient basis is defined as a hotel and all that. But I think to be clear, it's good to have that in the standard. So I'd recommend including that. And then another one, it was pointed out just for some clarification, the definition that guest buildings do include attached and detached structures. They do attached and detached units, and the standards apply whether they are attached or detached to the main residence. And those are, so I would recommend those additions in addition to the ordinance as presented for your discussion, and I'll be happy to answer questions.
I have one.
Go ahead, Commissioner
Boyce. I like what this says, but it was a little confusing to me because we're using a new term called an accessory dwelling, which was mentioned in the master plan, but it's not mentioned and defined in the ordinance. And what I would say,
I think that might be a remnant. I think, yeah. And sorry, I'm sorry for.
Well, let me tell you where I'm going with this. The definition in the ordinance of a guest building, as it originally was written, allows for a building that I could put my family and friends in. I'm not going to rent it out, and it may or may not have a kitchen in it. I can't imagine us wanting to use as a secondary house a property that does not have a kitchen. So we're using accessory dwelling. And in the ordinance, you've listed it, you've added it as an accessory dwelling, but it's not in the definitions. And if you follow what was in the master plan, I would tell you that an accessory dwelling to me would be a guest building that has kitchen facilities. So you can differentiate between the two. So that what I think we want to be able to say is that if you have a piece of property and you have a second apartment, that you can rent it out on a long-term basis, but I think we want it to have a kitchen in it. I don't think we want it.
What about a bathroom?
Well, the other things are all defined. The only thing that's different is the as opposed to a guest building has all those things, but it may or may not have a kitchen. I think that's the only exclusion we use. So I would like to see us, however we do this, to include this building that we're talking about that people can rent, has got to have a kitchen in it, however that's done. And it just seemed confusing to me when I was trying to make that fit.
Okay.
Well, under...
So, go ahead. No, I'm going to... That accessory dwelling 1.4, I think that was a remnant of an initial start on the ordinance to then define it, but So I'm going to say we don't use the term accessory dwelling at all because it's not defined or used anywhere else in the code. And I don't want to start using a different term and have to go through the rest of Title 18 to change it wherever guest building is used. And secondly, I would say that we intentionally don't want to say you have to have a kitchen because somebody could rent a bedroom out and a bedroom doesn't have a kitchen. I mean, they may provide meals. They may just rent the room, and whether it's a bedroom or detached guest building, they may rent it out, and it doesn't have to have a kitchen. So, I don't agree with that, that we have to say it has to have a kitchen to be rented out as a guest building, because they may provide, they may be a caretaker, they may have meals together, just as like, just as in a resident now, they may live in a bedroom and have meals with the family.
Yeah, but if I had a maid's quarters or something like that that didn't have a kitchen in it, I wouldn't charge them rent anyway. I think what we're talking about is a housing concept.
And I don't want to get into managing whether or not they're charging rent. So the kind of one of the things that I forgot to mention during this is that that's probably the least enforceable thing that. It hardest to enforce of anything we've talked about tonight is whether or not somebody's paying rent that's living in the accessory dwelling back and forth. So that's not the part that I think we should be regulating and saying. So I think we're allowing them to build the building. That's why the term rent is not in the title and not used in the ordinance. Well, it is for the time limit. You can't rent it for. That's the only place that's used, is that you can't rent this out for a short term. Like Airbnb rents out rooms, though, that don't have kitchens. So I'm trying to.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay.
I agree with that.
Okay. To clarify a few things, and I spent some time with staff yesterday or day before on this. I've been involved in quite a few of the ones that have come forward, and they're usually someone wants their family or their mom and dad or want to put another house on their 5-acre lot and all that. They were always done with the idea that it's for family use or guests. And the proposed amendment on the first section would eliminate the guest building there for only being used for non-family members. Anybody could be a guest. I could meet you on the street tomorrow and say, you can stay in my guest building and be my guest, okay? So anybody basically can stay there now, but all these that have been approved, the 16 that came, and they were usually due to size, because you can put 700 square feet, but on a smaller lot, that takes a special use permit, but in 1 or 2 acre, you can put 1,000 feet without it. Those were all approved with the idea that they weren't for rent or whatever, they were going to be for the use, et cetera. My concern now is if we go down this road and approve this, if someone comes in here and says, I want to convert my garage to a 1,000-square-foot guest building, and I'm going to rent it out, and we're going to have 500 people come do this, is that you can't stop them from doing that once we've approved that this can be for rent, okay? So in the years I've been on, and Lee's, there are 16, so there might be another handful, 20 some. I'm sure most of those are being used for family members or guests or caretakers. If someone's a caretaker and you say, I've got a place out back, you can stay. I'm going to pay you $800 a month to take care of my mom, and you can stay in my place. They could stay there. That's not illegal or whatever. I just have real concerns, and we can discuss it more, to a realtor saying, hey, you can't afford that mortgage, but if you convert your garage and make an apartment out of it, you get $1,000 a month. Is that kind of what the master plan's looking at in neighborhood development, et cetera? I have real concerns about this, and for 20 possible units to then be able to rent them or whatever, do we want to open that can of worms? Mm-hmm. That's just my feeling. And my comment.
I actually am concerned about this too, because we have multifamily areas that are zoned for multifamily. We have areas with HOAs that they have to do a special thing on there, and they have to be, the casitas have to be part of the, you know, a caregiver thing. A friend of mine that's a very, you know, notable real estate agent that's been here for, gosh, 40 years, put this out on her Facebook to say, what do you think about this? And I think the thing that was really interesting about it was that they came back and they said, they allowed this in Sparks, and now look what we have in Sparks. So I think that was one of the concerns. The other concern is that if we are looking at our last meeting, is we gave out permits because of water in a sewer, and most of these areas that are going to be impacted are going to be the older infrastructure areas, which have already been burdened. Are we going to be using these not accessory buildings, guest buildings, as are they going to be using those permits that could have been used for single-family homes? So.
As I think you all know, I've been hoping that this would come before us. It is in the master plan. It was adopted as part of the 2006 master plan that the city would move forward on accessory dwelling units. So it's not something that's coming out of the blue. I think, you know, many jurisdictions in Nevada have had accessory dwelling unit ordinances for years. Douglas County's had it since at least 96. There have been no issues with the accessory dwelling units in Douglas County. They're very popular. A lot of people use them either for family members or they do rent them out. In many jurisdictions, it's seen as a very positive step forward in terms of affordable housing because it allows the market to work. There's no government subsidy, and it allows people either to rent it out or to use it for family members. The thing that I was thinking in terms of Commissioner Border's concern was that since the more common term is accessory dwelling unit, that at least it would help maybe to have a cross-reference in the definition so that their accessory dwelling unit is included in the definition and it just says cross-referenced to guest building. I'm glad to see that it's, you know, specifically for detached and attached structures. And I think it does make sense to put in that caution about non-transient basis because even though Carson City doesn't have a big VHR problem now, I think there's a legitimate concern that you know, if ADUs are approved by the Board of Supervisors, that some people would be very prone to start turning into VHRs. And the Reno proposal that's on the books now, they have the same kind of language in there for the proposed ADU ordinance in Reno. What I would hope is that if the Planning Commission were to approve allowing the city to go forward with this ADU ordinance, that you would remove the need to have a special use permit only if there were requirements that people were coming forward saying, I want a bigger unit or I can't meet the standards in the ordinance. Because right now, the guest building is allowed by right as an accessory unit. As Lee was saying, in the larger acreage properties, but you're saying now in the ordinance that you would have to get a special use permit just to have the accessory dwelling unit in the SF 12,000 or SF 6,000, and I would recommend that we allow them by right so that people don't have to come forward for a public hearing. The thing, too, I assume is that you're still requiring, as I think you do now, that one of the units would still have to be owner-occupied. In some jurisdictions, they have relaxed that requirement. I know it does make people nervous, but as long as you're still, and again, I assume that you still have that requirement in the code, that you know you have to have an owner-occupied property. And I don't think they have to stay in the large building. Sometimes people, when you allow the ADUs, like in Douglas County, the parents will move into that smaller unit and then end up either renting the house or else letting their kids move into the larger house. So, again, the accessory dwelling units have a lot of advantages, and it does allow the market to address the affordable housing needs. So I would hope that the Planning Commission would be in support in moving forward in this in some fashion.
I've been involved with several of those that have come up here in the last couple of years, and normally there are neighbors, et cetera, often against even with the non-rental or family-only clause in there. And that kind of is how I've accepted and been able to approve it, that in essence these people might be lowering their property values because if they can't rent that out, somebody else buys the house, there's a deed restriction on it. They've got something out back they can't really use. But again, if I'm sitting on a 1 or 2 acre or even a 6,000 or 12,000 foot, I don't want my neighbor coming out and being able to build a 700 square foot thing in his backyard without me having any say what's going to happen with it. I just have, I don't think that's how neighborhoods were set up or things that were planned in any development. And we do have certain areas of Carson where you have the larger lots, 5 acres, some of them on the southeast, et cetera. And it's where you find most of these accessory type buildings going in and coming to us to have them for a reason to do the size, whatever, I don't have a problem with. I want affordable housing badly for everybody as well, but I don't know when I'm told that once this passes, anybody basically can come in and put an accessory, a guest building in without even coming to us or anyone else. How many may pop up just because it's a way to make rent? You pay 20 grand to put the thing in, charge $1,000 a month, so in a year and a half, you know, you're making money. I don't know. I have still have great difficulty with it.
Preston. I have another question, too, is I know that in the residential section, if you are not owner-occupied, you pay a different tax structure than you pay if you're owner-occupied. So if part of the property is owner-occupied and part of it is not owner-occupied, how do you make that differentiation?
Staff or anyone has an answer?
That's a tax question, but I'm assuming that if the owner lives on the property, that's an owner occupied property for assessor's tax purposes. But that's, I'm not sure of that because I don't know the assessor's code, but that's what I suspect.
I'm a little confused about the concern here. Is it that somebody will be renting or occupying a separate building than the main house, the main structure, and that, like I said, I'm a little confused. I live on a street that there are 12 houses on my street. 7 of them are owner-occupied. 5 of them are rentals. So what is the difference between that rental property and if you had a accessory dwelling on a 12,000 square foot lot?
The concern is you have 10 rentals instead of 5.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because well, yeah, you're taking your house and putting another rental property on your property or that rental property, so you have 2 rental properties on that
okay, lot. And I guess I just don't see a problem with density since we've pretty much decided how dense we're going to make Carson.
Well, and again, this all says it has to be done and brought up to code and construction, et cetera. But again, so I go, you know, everybody on my street decides they're going to take their garage and change it into an apartment and start renting them out. That's not what I bought into when I bought my house. You know, I mean, and I don't think that's the when people design cities and master plan whatever, that you have to put some limitation on guest buildings or accessory buildings, or do you put them into an area where, you know, we kind of do that, but I just have a fear that for 20 some that are out there that may rent now is not going to solve the workforce problem. But once we approve this, anyone that wants to put a guest building on their lot 700 feet or 1,000 on can just go do it without anything?
Conversions. Well, and I understand that, but when we're looking at trying to affect some affordable housing for the workforce that we're hoping to bring, when we talked about the growth management and the standard median price for a new home is $295,000, and your median income here in Carson City is $49,000. There's a huge disparity between who can afford as a primary workforce when you are just coming to town and you're making, you know, $15 an hour as income, when you're trying to find a place to rent anymore. And believe me, I hear this a lot because I work with a couple of ladies who don't make a lot of money and have issues trying to find a place to live because the rents have been jacked up so high. They can't afford an apartment. They can't afford to rent a house. I know the kids that rent next to me, they split the rent three ways because that's all they can afford. So if you are looking at an accessory dwelling that you might be able to rent for less than, you know, the $1,500 a month to rent a house or the $1,200 a month that they're charging to rent an apartment, you know, we have to start looking at this all holistically instead of at a level of, you know, what's going to happen if this happens. Well, I just think we need to start looking at a broader picture of housing here in Carson City. If we're going to develop Carson City, if we're going to look at bringing businesses into Carson City, we have to look at how we are able to subsidize or support the workforce that's coming here. And if we can't do that, then all of the planning and all of the stuff that we've been talking about isn't going to do much good. And that's just my take on this because I see it firsthand. I worked for the welfare division for 28 and a half years. I worked for a private nonprofit. I see it, and I hear it every day. And, you know, it's just I just feel very strongly about it, in case you can't tell. I mean, I'm usually very calm.
I just don't see how this is going to help that problem very much. We're talking about small apartments added on to a house or on a lot. There's some new house designs that include that in there. You know, they'll build a mother-in-law house or mother-in-law room inside that. But if we're talking about a small unit, and where I would guess most of these would be one bedroom, I can't imagine, you know, we've got 36 or so now.
About 20.
20? All right. If we had 100, we're going to house another 100 people because they're going to be one bedrooms and they're going to have one person in them and maybe two. So we're going to house another 100 people. I don't necessarily see how that's going to completely solve the affordable problem. I don't see them being affordable. You know, they're not going to be affordable. So are we opening up a Pandora's box to solve a problem that we can't solve with this approach? I'm not saying we shouldn't work on trying to find ways for affordable housing. I'm just not sure this concept gives you affordable housing. It gives you more housing, but I'm not sure it's affordable. And
so more housing. So on behalf of the housing committee, and we've heard this. So more housing is better and helps availability because there's people getting by the rents going up, they're getting pushed out the bottom of the food chain, so to speak. So everybody agrees, and all the housing folks agree that the building of market rate housing right now does help, in particularly apartments, helps the problem overall because it frees up somebody's moving up into that because now that because there's no availability right now, so somebody's moving up into that and it frees up the other apartments that are more affordable. So any housing does help. The housing workforce group acknowledges that this particular solution is a very small solution. It's not because it may be like even if it's 100, I think that would be a lot. This Pandora's box argument, I don't buy it so much, particularly because, I mean, we see the people coming in that they ask the questions. I mean, people, not everybody wants to live with somebody else living on their property. In fact, most people probably don't. And even if it's a rental, that's a whole different set of problems. So we just don't get that many people. If this is San Francisco or Berkeley, every garage is going to be converted, but we don't have that kind of problem in housing market here. I don't think you'll have a single family neighborhood with a row of garages converted to housing.
I,
I think we need to work more on what's being developed. And we ask everyone that comes in here, the two or three apartment complexes, we've asked them, and I've discussed with staff, is there ways you can give them a benefit to make some of those more affordable? Mm-hmm. But like Lee says, as those 300 or 400 or 500 or 600 apartments open up, people are going to either come in and occupy those new, or they're going to move up and open an apartment that may be in somebody's smaller apartment complex or whatever, more affordable, whatever. But again, my only concern is right now, I don't hear anyone coming from those 16 special use permits or the others saying, I want to be able to rent this. So they're probably not available anyway. Right. And once we approve this, then again, it gives the opportunity that people can put these in without having to ask. I don't think that's what I say. Is it worth opening that can even for 20, 30, 40 of them? I've seen people coming in on the ones that are here. Usually aren't happy when you start changing the neighborhood from what they already have, okay? So, but there won't be any control over that. If someone wants to do that, we can't say, no, we don't think you should be able to rent that, because we've said they can here.
So. And I appreciate your argument about that. And I guess my main reason for even bringing anything up was that we really do need to start addressing some of these issues with housing, low-income housing, if we're looking at bringing in any kind of a workforce here to increase development somehow or another, that we have to start encouraging construction, whoever, to start looking at that affordable housing issue. If it means building tiny homes, if it, you know, whatever it means, then we need to really start focusing on that. Otherwise, it doesn't matter how many businesses we open or building permits we allow if we don't have some place to house the workers that are going to be building these houses or working on the roads or doing the everyday stuff that we do.
Unfortunately, a lot of that's outside our realm. It's more up to the supervisors and others is to, you know, try to figure out a way to do that. I mean, it's...
If I was gonna build a 700 square foot addition on my lot, it's gonna cost me about $100,000 to $140,000. Mm-hmm. It's new construction. Mm-hmm. If it's freestanding.
What about converted garage?
Well, if it has a fireplace and a bathroom in it, then it's going to still cost $100,000. We're not going to solve the problem because it's going to have to rent for more than I can make it amortized. And I just don't know.
Public comment on this from anyone? Seeing none, it's right back at us again.
Again, I would just say that it is in the master plan. It was adopted with the 2006 master plan. So even if the Planning Commission is not ready, does not feel comfortable, although I hope you would be, to look at some incremental way of moving forward on this. Maybe some of the commissioners are not comfortable in going full force on this, but it's needed. It works. Housing studies that have been done show that typically the ADUs are not rented at market rate. They're rented below market rate. And, you know, certainly if there's more of a discussion that's needed for another meeting to look at more material on this, great. But they do work. And again, as I said, I used to work in Douglas County. Douglas County's had it for years. There's been no problems with it at all.
You say they're in the master plan, not as guest houses.
No, as accessory dwellings.
See, but that's not what we're talking about.
Don't get caught. We're talking about accessory dwellings in the layman's terms. It's just the term that's in Carson City Municipal Code has been for whatever reason, is guest building.
Well,
but we're talking about accessory dwellings.
I do agree, though, that we need to make a linkage between the code and the master plan, and there is none right now. So, yeah, we could be very simple, but I agree with what you say. Is it's in the master plan. We need to acknowledge that at least somewhere.
Further discussion? Commissioner?
I have one more concern, is that a lot of people get caught up, instead of accessory buildings, into tiny homes, and not understanding a lot of the tiny homes are essentially RVs. And so I think that it's very important that there's a differentiation about that, because if you're putting an RV on your yard, that's different than what's in there. And the
same with a HUD house, HUD manufactured.
Right. Well, you mean a manufactured home, right? Because essentially they're personal property rather than real property. So I think that that's something too. Because I know in my neighborhood you cannot have an RV, so I could not have a tiny home. However, I could have a casita if I wanted to do that, and I've got a 1,400 foot garage that'll be an awesome apartment. You know, do I think my neighbors are going to like it? No. So I think that my neighbors, if they did it or if I did it, I would like to have some input as to what was going to change the demographic of my home. Because this is why I went into a specific area with CC&Rs. This is why I went into it, because it was single family, and that I know I can have a mother-in-law's quarters and expect to have a mother-in-law quarter. I can do that. But was that ever out there that I could actually rent it out to somebody else? I understand that I would have that opportunity as, you know, far as a right to do it. But that, I don't think, was the original intention of the CC&Rs and the planned unit development I live in. So.
Under the discussion here, it mentions a manufactured or a mobile home is not considered a guest building. A recreational vehicle is not allowed as a guest building in a zoning district. And Lee and I discussed tiny homes are considered an RV. So,
tiny homes are an RV if they're on wheels, but you can, if you put them on the ground per the building code, it's just a small home. So it could be a 300 square foot home, could be a tiny home, could be used, but you can't wheel in those ones on trailers and live in them.
But you're saying you could take a tiny home, put a little foundation in your backyard, set them on it, and it's now a guest building.
If you meet building code, to meet the building code. No, not a converted, not a manufactured home, not ever a manufactured home. No, not as an ex. You cannot use a mobile home, manufactured home, as a guest building. In manufactured home zoning, you can convert a mobile home to real property, but you can't do that for an accessory dwelling. So you can't use it.
So if I have a tiny home on wheels, okay. So if I have a tiny home on wheels, that is actually, usually they're certified by manufactured housing. Yeah, I mean, like, if I go ahead and I get the, like, cozy cabin, it's manufactured home. So if I have that, I can't take that and convert that, even if I could. I guess I could do it if I was to put it on a foundation.
If you met the uniform building code, and it met the uniform building code.
But at the same point, it was originally built under manufactured housing as a.
That's, I mean, problematic, so because when it has a certification, then it's a manufactured home, right, to everybody. Yeah.
Right. Okay. That's one thing I wanted to clarify, because there seems to be some confusion about that too. So.
And for a motion, you know, right? I've kind of mentioned where I kind of.
Well, I don't know whether it's better to move this now and have it go down in flames, or continue this to the next meeting.
I have no problem continue whatever. I mean, I still have difficulty with what this is going to accomplish. And I have difficulty with the potential. I just don't like losing that
oversight or whatever as to what's going on in somebody's neighborhood as to the guest buildings or whatever. So,
would, if we were to continue this to the next meeting and bring back some more information, would that be helpful? I'm asking.
Seems to be a sensitive issue, so maybe it should be addressed too, and we have all of the rest of our commission here as well. I mean, there's only five of us today, and two of our members are missing. So if it seems like it's possibly going to go or not go, I think it would be best, and maybe they'll have some more input as well, but maybe a little more clarification on, say, Douglas and Sparks, whatever, what the situation is, but... Yeah, I have no problem with that. Is that kind of the consensus of the rest of the commission?
You don't need a motion.
We don't need a motion. We can just
you can just go ahead and decide to continue that if you want.
Let's continue this and discuss further and make sure the full commission has input on it. All right, does that work? Thank you. That will be continued. Staff reports.
Yeah, just real quick. In June, the Board of Supervisors heard the marijuana sign ordinance on second reading. I mentioned that to you the last meeting. Just to note, on July 5th at the Board of Supervisors meeting is when they're going to consider growth management. They had a joint meeting with the Board of Supervisors, and I gave roughly the same presentation to, they had a meeting with the school board, Carson City School Board, a joint meeting at their last meeting, and I gave basically that same presentation, and there were some questions, but the school didn't have a lot of additional comments for them at that time, so expect that to go forward. And on the July 25th Planning Commission meeting, that's when you're going to have officer elections for the chair and vice chair for the next year. And actually, I think we need to get those on back on the schedule for the new term. Your new terms are up in January from now on. But anyway, new elections will be in the next meeting. An abandonment for West Wellington regarding abandoned public access up Ash Canyon. Special use permit for signs around the new congregate care facility being built on Mountain Street, but it spans from Mountain Street over to Minnesota, so it has a lot of frontage. They have extra beautiful monument signs, no temporary signs. And then you continued the Blackstone Lampa Ranch zoning map amendment, so as long we'll have that on agenda, assuming they want to continue to pursue that application. And that's all I have.
Any Commissioner Tindall?
I have a question. You just said that the term expirations are now January of any given year. So, say Mr. S. Wayne's term expiration is 6 of 19. It's now 1 of 19, or?
It's now 1 of 19, correct. You have, yeah, so we were, changed the policies and then had a time period, but still had to elect the people we had.
So the commissioner and Commissioner Montano are all the same. And I will go to one of 20.
And we'll change the officer's election calendar for that, too. To
that's
be towards
why we,
the start
that's why
of the
we did
terms,
that
yeah.
is because twice yep. our chairman didn't get reappointed to the next term. So I suggest that we make it this after the election. So we should probably do our elections maybe in February or something. Do we have to? Whatever.
Yeah.
Check and see what we have to do. Okay, any other commissioner reports or comments? Public comment? Seeing none. Motion for adjournment.
We adjourn.
All in favor, aye. Let's do it. Thank you.